Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. Jeff Rentz with Bill Tompkins. And what we are learning is where we have been. And that will help a lot of us figure out where we're going. Got to have a rearview mirror, and thanks to Bill, we have a knockout. This is, again, stunning documents. Do go, spend some time, and read, and listen to this program. Share it. I think if you listen to the program twice, you'll get even much more out of it. There's so much happening, and it's really hard for a lot of people, younger and older people, to believe that this was going on back then. And where we are now, that was 70 years ago. So go ahead, Bill. Onward. This is amazing. More about Einstein, and he's considered such a faultless god by many. And I've talked to people in physics, and they just go prostrate in front of him, and they will not question anything he does or says. He figured it out. It's all been done, 70, 80 years, 90 years ago by Einstein, and it just isn't true. We know so little about what we have as a species developed. Six dimensions, as you mentioned. Six dimensions, not three. That should open a door in your mind. Let me go to the main directory page, the one I alluded to, and read these comments by Ben Rich for you. A lot of you don't know them. Some of you have read them before. Let me read this one, and I'll ask all of you to understand that these are credible, real comments. Ben Rich said, "We already have the means to travel among the stars, but these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to ever get them out to benefit humanity. Anything you can imagine, we already know how to do." Ben Rich, former director of Lockheed Skunk Works, shortly before he passed. Just an amazing statement. From there, you go on to another statement, and then you'll find the PDFs that we've been alluding to. There are four of them, and there's a preface that I'd like all of you to take a look at as well before you go into the others. It will help set the stage. All right, Einstein, held as a god by many people, even in physics today, the ultimate, the be-all, the end-all, the man who could make no mistakes, the man who figured it all out and ended all means or need to continue serious inquiry into physics. Nothing could be further from the truth. Einstein deserves his credit, his just due. He got us to the door, but he didn't go through that door. He stopped at the top step on the porch. Go ahead.
Okay, this is back to this Bissell field and how it got started.
Right.
And I'm just going to read this one little bit. This furnished eight set systems of six-dimensional, nonlinear differential equations, which described a universal cosmic law. Now, what he is saying here is that this was a discovery that was made in attempting to come up with a workable spaceship propulsion system. And in addressing it, he's looking at a system that doesn't match anything in mathematics. So what did we just say to ourselves? We said once again, and I hate to keep talking about, I don't know, Jeff says these things all the time, but it turns out that information which we have and we are taught in the universities is incorrect information, whether it's mathematics, whether it's astronomy, whether it's physics, it doesn't make any difference. Essentially, for thousands of years, we've gone to school, we got our degrees, we got our doctors, and we end up, I don't have one of those, we end up being the top man in that technical field, but the information was wrong. So here on page 37, the first thing they run into is that they went to a six-dimensional concept approach, which mm-hmm. doesn't even fit into mathematics, period. Mm-hmm. It defies Einstein's theory of relativity. And all we're saying is we're in a learning curve. We've had our heads in the sand here on this planet for a long time. And it's interesting when you read some of these programs, the approaches that people have taken, and the discoveries that come from addressing something different than the mathematics or different than the astronomy. It's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to get on the soapbox, but go ahead.
No. You should. This is where you really stand out, and you can help many see much further than they would ever even imagine. This is all important. The knowledge that we have predicated our existence on and our entire academic bedrock is flawed. It's not complete. It's rudimentary. It's elementary in many ways, and it's wrong, as Bill said. I'm not a physicist. I can't tell you that from a position of having a PhD in the field. But I can tell you what I've read and what I've heard for years and years match perfectly with what Bill is inviting us to explore, that we need a lot more schooling. When we get to the end and there's nothing else to learn, how boring will that be? And yet that's exactly what many physicists seem to suggest. I think privately many of them probably know that there's an awful lot out there that we haven't even peeked at yet. So, Bill, go right ahead. This is fascinating.
Well, it's on page 41 over there. They're going into another type of a propulsion, and they've talked about the use of vacuum tubes in being able to analyze the system. Well, gee whiz. Vacuum tubes ran out several weeks ago, okay?
Yes.
And it shows...
Except in my 1930s radio collection. They still work.
Okay, yeah. Look at the technical accomplishments that we've really made in a very short period of time.
Well, the learning graph comes along, it crawls along through the millennia and the centuries, and all of a sudden it almost goes straight up, probably 70 degrees. It just goes up. It rockets if you look at it. It's quite stunning. The learning, the information, the knowledge, the wisdom just took off in that period of time that we're talking about, in the 40s and 50s. Go ahead.
Well, a great deal of what's in this document referred to nuclear propulsion. But when they got through with that, they found that there were many problems with nuclear.
Right.
And so the solving of these problems, maybe you want to hit them with that part, Jeff, on the nuclear.
Well, wrap it up for us. I'll be reading the wrong parts, and just give us the idea that it was something that had too many faults that couldn't all be corrected to make it really efficient and really safe. It was very unwieldy. It was just not an efficient system. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And the word safe was put to the side and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. And so, yes, they went ahead and developed the nuclear bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said before, we blew up some of Japan, and then we did a whole bunch of testing afterwards. And
the radionuclides of which are still floating above our heads around the planet in the upper atmosphere. They haven't all settled out. And that was in the 1940s and 50s when we blew up all those islands in the South Pacific. crazy. And then we lit them off in the Nevada desert, killed John Wayne, among other people. Lots of people died from those. It's all a story that it kind of points to what I just posted on the site today. They're now admitting that the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, that they call it a former nuclear facility. Hanford? No, it's not former at all. Has been and is causing innumerable deaths and suffering in terms of catastrophic illness among people who simply live in the area, especially east, downwind from Hanford. So, yes, the nuclear genie never should have been let out of the bottle. One of the worst mistakes ever on this planet in known history. Fukushima being, of course, at the top of the list. Something that is out of control now, worse than it was 5.5 years ago, and is not going to be resolved any time in the foreseeable future. The North Pacific Ocean is largely depleted of life forms now. It's nothing like it used to be, and it's going to get worse and worse. Fukushima, you never hear about it. When's the last time CNN told you anything about Fukushima, or anybody? Nobody. We talk about it here, but that's it. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, actually, you're right, Jeff, that we don't talk about it. We don't say what happened. We don't address the damage that took place there and the damage that will continue to take place. We may never fix it.
That's right.
And I'm not trying to say I'm an environmentalist and we shouldn't do certain things. We should never have done what we did in any respect as far as nuclear. And many extraterrestrial civilizations came here because they picked that up immediately when you did it. And a lot of people are asking, well, why do they have so many extraterrestrial UFOs here? That's your answer, sir.
And why do they hang around our ICBM bases with multiple nuclear warheads, MIRV warheads? Why do they hang around nuclear power plants? They're watching this planet very closely and carefully because of the nuclear catastrophe we are constantly playing with. It's almost like we want to end our civilization such as it is. And we may have in the past several times. There's ample evidence of a nuclear war or some kind of nuclear cataclysm in India. There are nuclear readings and radionuclides in the ground all over the place in one large area. It may be that Mars had a nuclear war at one time. And apparently a lot of our visitors, as Bill said, are here watching what we're doing. Maybe they'll make a stop. One can only hope before it's too late.
Yes, and I have to say, I'm not going to say which facility, but I personally was required to participate in a review of one of the Air Force's ICBM facilities, which had been shut down. And so this is not some joke. It's not some person's made-up story. The extraterrestrials shut the system down. Now, they did this purposely because they wanted to let you know that this is a no-no. They actually, from what's been determined now, I'm not going to say where, but they shut equal number of Soviet ICBMs down at the same time. And they're letting both of us know you shouldn't be doing this. And you're being slapped on the wrist pretty hard. So they have the capability of shutting down your capability of operating ICBMs. Don't kid yourself. And but playing with nuclear, gee whiz, we've got a nuclear facility just north of San Diego here. They still can't figure out how to remove the reactor. They don't know how to remove all of the tanks, which have got all the other stuff in it. It's sitting there, it's not operating, and it's leaking. And they want the state of California to pay for the removal, of this, and so there's all kinds of legal aspects going on. But what it comes down to is you have another large nuclear facility, which was leaking before. It's still leaking, but unlike Oregon, who got really upset with the situation, they demanded that it be removed, and they got the funds to remove it, and they took it out. And that's what needs to take place here in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
because it's the wrong thing to do. Everybody knows it, but it continues to be a problem.
Very well said.
Okay, let's get back. Yeah, let's get back with some of the interesting things that are in this particular document. When you're talking about what fields or what methods, what technical abilities that you know about that can be used for some sort of a propulsion system. On this one page, they talked about atomic hydrogen as a form of propulsion. But then they got into the problems with it. And they have high voltage discharge problems, which couldn't be controlled. They got a result of excited mercury, which gets to be out of control. They had ultraviolet light being implemented. They had even standard X-ray and gamma ray and alpha particles and ingredients which were being floating around in the system. So they said back then when this document was printed, no nuclear. Okay, now uh-huh. It's not that they didn't look at it, because there's quite a number of just people that addressed it. But they then looked at what you had to deal with, and they said no. And I think this is interesting. These people, which they're really the RAND Corporation, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They said, no, don't do that. And I've read articles about different doctors at RAND that said we are working on a nuclear this and nuclear that. That's somebody's pipe dream.
Hmm.
That's not the truth. You got the truth right here in this document, and they themselves studied it in dozens of different ways and came to the conclusion, you better not do that. That's not good for you. I don't want to give them more credit than they deserve, but I have to say, this is exceptional, really. What's in this document is, I think, technically and even morally,
Right. Good point. Yeah. There are moral ethics and boundaries and parameters which you don't really hear about much with science. It's kind of like, well, if mankind or humankind can figure out how to do it, damn the consequences, they're going to do it. And that, unfortunately, has been how many things have come into being that are and could spell our demise.
Yeah. Over in, I guess, two-thirds of the way through the book, it says, no new proposals are presented for the application of nuclear energy for propulsion. And the authorities concluded that an oxygen hydrogen drive is probably the best method pending new technology developments,
mm-hmm.
but nuclear should not be used.
Right.
Wow. And so it's not that Jeff is saying we shouldn't be using nuclear. These guys came to that conclusion way back then.
Yeah.
And I don't think people, this doesn't get published because they don't want you to know what took place. And they want to push the oil companies. They want to push the electrical systems.
They would have pushed the nuclear industry too, Bill, and they're still building reactors. Not many, but they're still building them. There are plans on the board. They're crazy. This was known in the 1940s and 50s. This was potentially a death sentence for the planet. Once you let that genie out, you'll never get it back. And look what we've done. Every nuclear power plant on the planet is basically storing its nuclear waste. There's nowhere to put it. They're supposed to be custodians of it for at least 50,000 years, and these plants only have a 40-year life expectancy? Where's the return? This is it's completely insane. Completely. There's no justification for anything nuclear, period. None of it.
Okay, they're also talking about outer space, where things do not weigh anything, and very low load factors should be acceptable. They're talking about construction of the vehicle. Even though the propulsion is going to put stress on the fuselage or the basic structure of the vehicle, in space, you don't have the same structure that you do with the gravitational field of the planet.
We're going to go through the breakdown. Go ahead, Bill.
People don't address that either. Okay, you say, well, you have to launch it from here, but better that you put the parts together in a large satellite, or like we had planned back in the 40s, build a 10,000-man research and naval research and operational base underneath the ground on the moon. And so it's a lot better to the vehicle to do that were called NOVAs. And again, you see NOVAs in that book. And the NOVA vehicles were to get the hardware up there to build the underground facilities. Also, at the same time, the planning was not to build the space vehicles here, but build them on a base on the moon.
Huh.
Because of the gravitational field situation, where you can structurally build it and you don't have to build a launching capability with a gravitational field on Earth. So once again, we're talking about not just missions that people are not addressing, but we're talking about geometry, we're talking about physics, and we're talking about virtually every technical field being incorrect to deal with reality. And this is over and over and over in this document. To me, it's interesting that we're talking about this. People around the planet are hearing it. Hopefully, some of this is going to excite some other people, and they're going to take the ball and run with it.
Well, what you've gifted us all with in this first installment, and there will be more, is, again, an overview of our scientific collectivity that no one has ever seen before. In terms of space, in terms of out there, in terms of the universe in which we live, we have a galaxy that is enormous. And think of all the billions of stars and hundreds of billions of planets that are out there. And these people who sit around saying that there is no other intelligent life out there or that can get here because Einstein said so, they just don't get it. And I feel sorry for them that their minds... Well, it's like Stanton Friedman said years ago, 20-some years ago he said this to me, don't bother me with the facts. My mind is made up.
Wow. Over and over.
Yeah. Well, whenever you idolize and make someone into a deity, like they do with Einstein, and put a cap on a field, you got to think, well, maybe there's more to it than that. And what in reality is going on, of course, is that black ops physics is way beyond that, would be my guess. Again, I'm no physicist and I haven't been there, but looking at the data and connecting the dots, I would say that there is a tremendous amount of science that is obviously not being discussed. Look what they weren't talking about 60 and 70 years ago, and imagine where they are now. Really something. But you're so right about nuclear, Bill. The day the Earth stood still, 1951, when one of our visitors came here, our fellow galactic friends, and gave the planet a deadline, whatever it was, a week, 2 weeks, 30 days. You've got 30 days to dismantle all of your nuclear programs, weapons, everything, or we will destroy the planet. They know how dirty nuclear is. They know they don't want it off this planet. And that's the end. And that's that film was so important, so portentous, and so correct that it is truly one of the greatest films ever because of the message. You talk about morals, and there they are. The day the Earth stood still, 1951, and you wonder what director-producer Robert Wise knew when he was making that film, if he wasn't told about some things and maybe encouraged to make it. What a film. Michael Rennie, just an amazing film.
Yes.
Just imagine, Bill, the scientists that we're talking about tonight who are quoted in these documents were alive then, most of them, and I'm sure a lot of them saw that film, and I'm sure a lot of them got the message. But they couldn't stop it. Too much money. It's all about money. Not one nuclear power plant has ever turned a penny profit. Never will. And all they've done is drain the resources and finances of those who they allegedly serve and leave the countryside strewn with radioactive death, which will never stop giving. It's the gift that keeps right on going.
It's very unfortunate that we've allowed ourselves to get into this because actually we've been controlled. And I hate to bring up this word mind control, but quite frankly, that's what it is.
You bet.
And it's a subject that really needs to be addressed because we're not in a good position. It's not that that being out in the galaxy, we're going to get chopped up by some bad guy extraterrestrials. Most of the facts that we've been able to put together indicate that two-thirds of people out there are benevolent. They're not all bad guys. But it takes a few bad guys to totally destroy planets. And we're just talking about a few stars close to us that have several numbers of planets too. And we look at the size of the galaxies, the number of galaxies, and it's insanity to think that everything is bad. We can fix this, but we need to be honest with what we're saying, and we need to collectively understand what the situation really is and take a collective approach and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, good thoughts. Very, very important thoughts. Go ahead, Bill.
I just want to talk a little bit about this. This is not the back page, but it's Dr. Klemper talking. And he gets into sort of a preliminary of a completion of this document, because there was another one that came out after this did 3 years later. But he's saying that the most important thing that came out of the studies was that we should not be using nuclear, and that we should address what would be documented unmathematical approaches which could possibly give us the type of propulsion we would want to use.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's really saying is, okay, we have to work with what we've got. But like we had just discussed here earlier this evening, this one fella comes up with a six-dimensional system, whereas we only know and operate in mathematics, we only work with a three-dimensional. But what Elmer Wheaton is saying is that don't turn this off. Look at and address approaches that may not fit into our normal mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the other approach. And the one where this individual, he does his study, and to make his work, he's got to operate in six dimensions. How do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're sort of addressing, we really need to back off and look through a big window. We're playing with a small portion of what's going on. We're just standing here by the fence, and we're looking over the fence out in the galaxy, and we don't know what's going on. We make up our mind, can't do this, and you can't do that, because mathematics said so-and-so.
Right. Tunnel vision.
Document,
that's right.
Right in this document, they're saying there's another approach that can be used for propulsion, but it requires the use of six dimensions. Wow. I think that's cool.
That's very, very, very interesting. If you look up, by the way, RAND, R-A-N-D, we've all heard of it, RAND Corporation, and after what Bill told us earlier, if you look it up, here's the primary exposition of what RAND is. RAND Corporation is an American nonprofit global policy think tank originally formed by Douglas Aircraft Company to offer research and analysis to the United States Armed Forces. It is financed by the U.S. government and private endowments. RAND Corporation is an American nonprofit global policy think tank originally formed, as I said, by Douglas Aircraft. Keep that in mind. And you heard it here from Bill tonight, how it all started.
Wild. Really?
Yeah.
I don't want to make a big deal about this, but really, I think this is extremely interesting that we're talking about this. You go further back into it, and then you get into this situation. The subject title on this particular is Aboard Flying Saucers. Oh, my goodness. What's this all about? And so here we've really been talking around the subject all evening, and now we're on the several pages at the end of the document, and now we're talking about flying saucers. And, of course, that's what the whole thing was all about.
Yeah.
But you get all of this negative approaches and impossible approaches. And then some of them actually can provide a start for developing that kind of propulsion, even if we have to use six dimensions to do it. And so I think... where we get into the this other, let me just read this one. The author claimed to have seen at elevated separate occasions,
mm-hmm,
a long human visitor permitted to be on board a 300-foot saucer landed on a desert area by a crew of small men handling by a beautiful lady captain from a planet. I guess her name's in here. This is in a document on propulsion.
From the 1950s.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to go and read this thing to you. You guys got to look this up. But you get the point. Yes, top technical people have been aboard extraterrestrial vehicles here, here in the United States. And surprisingly enough, the captain turns out to be another tall, blue-eyed blonde. Oh, my goodness. What are we talking about, Nordics?
You know, it's funny when you think about our culture and our history, how blue-eyed blondes have a special niche in it. And there's a reason for that.
What's the reason?
You've just been telling us about it for the last 3 or 4 months. It's called Nordics. And they come here and they clearly are involved with some very good things. And it makes me really sad to even go over all of this, because I see the potential of the species and the potential of the planet, and I see where we're being dragged and taken. We're not even kicking and screaming anymore. We're being lulled into a state of mental stasis that allows us to be taken wherever they want, addicted to whatever they want, and just pushed around like sheep. And that's where it's all going. This next generation, they're calling it millennials now. What about the generation after the millennials, which are often called by me moronials? They're just dumb. They don't have the tools. There's a course now being taught in college, which is called adultography. And they're putting these kids who come to college who have no tools of survival or the ability to interact and create their environment in such a way that it will benefit them or anyone else. They're completely helpless. They're having to study in college how to be an adult, Bill. That's pretty scary.
How to be an adult. Oh, my gosh. We are in trouble. I'm going to go ahead and say something here. This young lady that was the boss of this 300-foot diameter saucer. Now, this is in the secret document we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that she was a very nice person, but she spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent English, and she also spoke a whole bunch of other languages, too. And, okay, this is a report, but and it's dated 1954. I think that having that, you have to read the whole thing, having that in this document is interesting, because it takes you out of the frame of trying to figure out how to make a propulsion, and it allows you to visualize a 300-foot diameter vehicle that came here from some other star's planet, and it had nice people on board.
Mm-hmm.
All they wanted to do was help. Wow. Very interesting.
A novel idea. All they wanted to do was help.
Yeah. And but like you're saying, we're going to have to get to the point of implementing this, to call it whatever you want. It's disclosure. And we need disclosure, because we need to understand who we are, what's happened, and what's going to happen if we let this to continue. And we're already in trouble. We need to fix a whole lot of things, but we can do it. But if we don't get together and implement disclosure, we're really going to be in trouble, because it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
We need to learn how to take care of ourselves. Unfortunately, the controllers of this planet are working to the antithetical end of that goal, that desirable goal. They want us to be unable to take care of ourselves, to be totally dependent, and therefore their control becomes that much easier. They've already got control. We're already in a prison I call the prison of usury, debt. It's a money prison, and we're not going to get out of it very easily. And that's the truth.
Well, what's your suggestion, Jeff? How do you see this, and how do you feel? How do you feel we should address it?
Bill, when I see stories like this, Portland adulting school teaches millennials how to be functional grown-ups. I don't think we're evolving in a liberated way. I think we're being directed, or this kind of thing wouldn't even be written. This is absurd. So there we go. No, I don't think it's going to happen on its own, Bill. I think something, unfortunately, what word can I use? Very aggressive is going to have to happen to tear down the contemporary paradigm, reconstruct it along proper lines of normal evolutionary patterns, and start basically from scratch. It's a generational process. We're going to have to take the next generation, whenever that time gets here, and raise that generation appropriately to respect, to respond, to interact, and integrate with the planet, with our resources, and with our future and our potential. It's going to have to happen. It's not going to happen in the hands in whose we're being held right now. They won't allow it. That's my thought.
I agree with you there. Yes, definitely. And I agree with you 100%. I've been hoping that we could put together, actually, there are now 5 separate groups that are pushing for disclosure. And I feel that that's going to help us. But like you say, it's not going to fix it. We have to take one step at a time and fix each area that's the problem.
Right.
And we have to do it legally, and we need to have some people put in prison after they've had a good judge to listen to their to what they've done.
Right.
But we still need to address everything that's upside down and come up with a fix for these so that we can implement what's really necessary to make the full change.
Absolutely.
And I'm hoping that we can get an earlier turnaround of the young people to address their education, not listen to everything that they're being taught. And that's, again, another problem because we have to fix the teachers.
The whole system, Bill, the whole system has grown in the wrong direction. It's grown in a negative, occultic, satanic, dark. The word is evil. We're not growing into enlightenment. Now, there are many people on this planet who are the opposite of that, and they get it. But they're not in control. They're not the dominant group in this species of ours. But listen to this story. Portland, it's in Portland, Maine, not Oregon, by the way. Let me just read a little of this. It's crazy. Millennials, people born between the early 1980s to the mid-1990s, are often labeled as lazy, spoiled, and unable to act mature enough to handle adulthood. But a new adulting school in Portland, Maine, is trying to change things by teaching millennials the skills required to function as real adults. We are in real trouble. Real trouble. There's a tremendous demand for this. This is the first manifestation of it I've seen in print. But these people are dysfunctional, these young people, many of them. And they're not going to learn through osmosis. They've got to be retrained. rewired, if you will. But to do that, we have to take the whole planetary system of greed and lust and carnal and all the rest of the negatives and expunge it. We have to remove it, and we've got to start over again on a much higher level. I think we've arisen on this planet, Bill, as a species a number of times and fallen into the essentially the same hole and had to start over again. So maybe we'll get it right one time.
Okay. I agree, but I don't quite... I'm not addressing it quite that way. I'd like to stand on the soapbox for a minute.
Please do.
And there's a thing that's called United States Navy League, and I've been involved with the Navy League for, gee whiz, since working at Douglas. So the Navy League is, I don't know, there's 50,000 people in the Navy League. And the standard approach is that the Navy League is to support Navy families and help them when they're into problems, and because the husband, being a man or a woman, mm-hmm. are at sea sometimes for long periods of time, and mm-hmm. that makes it hard on the family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the principal functions of the Navy League. But then there's another part of it, and it's the area that I have been involved in for, like, over 50 years, okay? And that's extraterrestrial studies. And so the Navy League Council that we had started up there in Oregon.
Medford, Oregon. Yeah.
And we found, for whatever reason, that there was a large number of retired naval officers that lived in that area. And so when I took some of my ship models and put them in the mall up there, and I just talked about the ship models, we used this as sort of an advertising of setting up a Navy League Council in Southern Oregon. And so it was extremely successful, and the organization grew very fast, and it turned out that we had something like 70% were retired naval officers. And so they, of course, were gung-ho on the Sea Cadets. Well, what's a Sea Cadet? That's a separate program that the Navy League has, and they have Navy League councils all over the world, actually, U.S. And so they sponsor roughly the children in pre-high school age, because some schools just go directly from the lower level right into high school.
Mm-hmm.
And other states and other areas have
middle school,
an intermediate group. And
yeah.
So that's the age group that we were pushing for. And I was privileged in being able to be one of the speakers at even our first Sea Cadet group that we were able to put together, which was a sizable number of children, okay?
Hmm.
And then they ended up with essentially a Sea Cadet program where they actually are trained in military naval programs.
It's kind of like a junior ROTC orientation.
Sort of. Except that we use the Navy's reserve facility in in the Medford area. We use the airport offices for some of our meetings. We brought in the mayor. He was one of our members. We have the top commissioners.
Go ahead, Bill. Okay. You had some of the county commissioners. Yeah, I know that. Let's pause right now. We'll come back in just a minute. You mentioned the mall. That was interesting. You put your ship models in there. Huh. That's very interesting.
For a short time.
Yeah, okay. Bill, hold on. We have to pause here at the top of the hour. So get yourself a glass of water or whatever, and we'll be right back in a few minutes. And carry on with Mr. William Mills Tompkins.